much for inviting me. So, we're talking about Galileo as a consistent local modification of gravity. This is work I published recently in collaboration with Riccardo Palazzi and Enrico Trincherini. So, what's wrong with GR? Well, GR is, first of all, beautiful, and that's whatever that means, and that's the traditional viewpoint, but more importantly, the modern viewpoint is that GR is essentially unique, okay? It's the only consistent low-energy quantum field theory of massless gravitons, okay? Nevertheless, there is a huge problem, which is the cosmological constant problem. And although the anthropic explanations we have so far might be the right ones, and that could just be the fact of life, perhaps it's worth investigating other possibilities. In particular, it's worth wondering whether there is something missing in the simple infrared picture of general relativity. Okay? Another fact is that the universe is accelerating, and of course that's perfectly consistent with the cosmological constant, but the size of the cosmological constant you need for the present acceleration is so different from what you expect that perhaps you start wondering that the cause of the acceleration of the universe is something else. Okay? So, so one starts investigating possible the infrared modifications of gravity. And it's difficult to come up to with the sensible alternatives to GR, exactly because GR is essentially unique. So if you assume Lorentz invariance, if you assume that gravitons are massless spin two particles, we know since the 1960s that GR emerges as the only possible candidate. Okay. So in order to modify gravity in infrared, you need to give up some of these assumptions, okay? Obviously. So, the assumptions, let me remind you, are the fact that gravitons are spin 2, and we don't want to give up this, because we know experimentally very well that gravity is mostly mediated by spin 2 particles, okay? So, the dominant part of gravity should be some spin 2 thing, okay? We give up the masslessness of gravitons, okay, and this leads to massive gravity, which is a pretty bad theory, okay, because you can make sense of it at the linear level around a flat background, but already around a mild gravitational field, like say field of Earth. You start seeing an extra mode, an extra scalar mode, which is a ghost. It has a negative kinetic energy. Okay, so this signals an instability of the solution you're talking about. And there's no known way of curing this. Okay, so this is a real problem of the theory at the nonlinear level. But where nonlinear doesn't mean Planckian energies. It means very mild gravitational fields. Okay, you could give up Lorentz invariance. And this leads to some Lorentz violating theory of massive gravity, like the Gauss condensate, or more general notions of it. And these are pretty good, as far as I know, both theoretically and phenomenologically, in the sense that they are not already ruled out. Okay? They have some problem with the thermodynamics of black holes, apparently. If that's a sacred thing you don't want to give up. Perhaps a more radical possibility is giving up an implicit assumption in this uniqueness of GR, which is locality. Okay? So in a sense, the DGP model exactly does that, because it's a five-dimensional theory. From a 4D point of view, it's a non-local theory. Okay? And there's a range of scale of scales in which it looks local and it reproduces standard four-dimensional general relativity, but at cosmological scales you start seeing the whole five-dimensional nature of the model, and you cannot just model it with some four-dimensional theory. Okay? And this is also good and bad. Good for some reasons and bad for others, which I'm going to tell you about. Okay? So, indeed, in my talk, I'm going to build on the DGP model, trying to generalize it, and trying to see where the origin of all the interesting features is, and trying to keep the good interesting features and removing the bad ones. And I will succeed partially, okay? But the logic of my talk is going to be that what I'm going to say is going to be very general, okay? I'm going to make a few basic assumptions, which, in my opinion, are very general. And I'm going to try to deductively build on those assumptions and try to see where we can get. Okay, so in all these examples, at scales much shorter than the scale of modification of the infrared scales of modification of gravity. So, of course, if you want to explain something cosmological as arising from modifications of gravity, you want gravity to be modified at some very large scales of order cosmological. Okay? So, in all these examples, at much shorter scales, the deviations from GR are well approximated by a scalar degree of freedom. Okay, let me call that phi. So there's a new scalar, which in some of these cases is not a real scalar globally defined in the whole universe, okay? But locally, when you zoom in locally at scales much shorter than Hubble, you can reproduce all the features of these models simply by saying that the full action is the Lagrangian of GR plus the Lagrangian of some scalar field pi universally coupled to the stress energy tension. Okay? This is true in massive gravity, this is true in DGP. In Gauss condensate and other Lorentz violating theory, it's more complicated than that. So I'm not gonna focus on this. Also there you have one scalar or more scalars, okay? But I'm not going to focus on this theories, because they have new features coming, of course, from the spontaneous breaking of Lorentz violation. I'm going to concentrate on the Lorentz preserving case, okay? That's true both for massive gravity and for DGP, and in general, that's going to be my starting point. So, in particular, this is the case in DGP, okay? In DGP, at short distances, and technically also away from black hole horizons, there is a new scalar degree of freedom, universally coupled to matter. Okay? And of course, sorry, by the gravitational field is coupled in the usual way to the stress energy tension. Now, a scalar like this mediates a 1 over R force. Okay? So delta Newton force is the 1 over R force. And we know this is bad.
Yes. 1 over R potential.
Yes, right. Sorry. 1 over R potential. Thanks. Yes, okay. Exactly. And we know that this is bad because, again, we know that at least the solar system scales, gravity is mostly mediated by spin to particle. Okay? So there must be a way, if we want the theory to make sense, observationally, otherwise we have to throw it away, there must be a way of screening the scalar at least at solar system distances, okay, where we know that gravity is perfectly approximated by GR. Okay? And the way this works in DGP is the so-called Weinstein effect. Okay? The effect is the following. Even in a regime where the gravitational field is very small, okay, and gravitational nonlinearities are totally negligible, the scalar sector, this L pi, has strong nonlinearities in it that has the effect of screening the scalar at short distances. Okay, so the picture is the following. So say we have Earth or the Sun or whatever. Very far away we have a 1 over R potential, both coming from gravity and from pi, okay? And at shorter scales, the Newtonian potentials, this grows like 1 over r, whereas the correction to the potential given by pi drops to 0 like this, okay? Like something like square root of r, if I'm not mistaken. Okay? So, and this scale is huge, okay? For instance, in the VGP model, if this is the sum, rather than error, say, in the VGP model, this is something like 10 to the 20 centimeters. So, a huge scale. And which means that when we get down to solar system distances, the scalar is totally invisible, okay? It mediates a long-range force only very far away, but at solar system distances, it's totally invisible. And that's how the VGP model does not conflict with solar system tests, okay? Nevertheless, I said it's totally negligible, but it's not really totally negligible.
Are you really happy with the existing proofs of that statement?
Existence proof?
No, existing of proofs supporting that statement. You know what I mean? I'm
happy with the one in terms of pi. I don't know the.
No, but do you actually know that there is really a smooth connection between the square root of r short and 1 over? There is always some story about something going bad, similar.
No, but let's say, so, I don't know about the case in which this is a black hole, that's subtle, but suppose this is really an astrophysical source like Sun, okay? Then, if you work in terms of, if you believe the four-dimensional description in terms of the scalar, by the way, which was introduced by Marcus Ratazzi and Porrappi, you can find the whole solution in terms of pi. The full nonlinear solution without any approximation. Of course, there's an approximation that has to do with the fact that you are trusting the four-dimensional Lagrangian.
Up to RC.
Yes. Up to the five-dimensional region.
And then you don't know. Okay, good. And then you don't know beyond that?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. So in a certain sense, right, thank you. Because you know, what I had in mind is this paper, old paper by Kogan and Amour and...
Yes.
Which basically said that you actually can't really smoothly connect into asymptotically, but some such claim, right?
But that's in Fields Pauli mass of gravity.
True,
right?
True.
Yes.
True.
And it's also at much shorter scales, I think.
Right.
Yes.
And I also noticed recently there was some paper by the FIN friends who sort of seem to claim there are some base around. I'm just asking, you know, purely out of ignorance about the current status of this story.
So I think that in DGP it's more robust the statement simply because DGP is an healthier theory than massive gravity. So there is a branch.
But it has a nonlinear completion, but things are more meaningful, right?
Exactly. Okay, but as you will see, I don't want to invest too much on DGP because I'm going to try to make some more generic construction. Okay.
No, I know. I'm just bringing you to Italian. I'm using opportunity to bug you now. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Sorry. By the way, I don't have a watch, so
just behind you.
Ah, okay.
Well, you can have mine.
What time do they start?
1:30.
Okay. So, in summary, what's good about the model? So there's no conflict with the solar system tests. You have observational predictions because it's not really true that inside the solar system there's no effect. This square root of r, if you plug in numbers, you see that it gives you a tiny effect, but tiny effect that can be measured according to some people assumed by laser lunar ranging experiments. Okay, and I mean the very interesting feature of the model, at least originally, was the fact that the very same nonlinearities, so we said there are nonlinearities here, okay, which are responsible for this Weinstein effect, the very same nonlinearities that screen the scalar at short distances also give you the so-called self-accelerating solution, okay? The self-accelerating solution is a solution, a cosmological solution of the model in which, in the absence of any sources, so T mu nu strictly equal to zero, given zero cosmological constant, okay, you have an accelerating universe, in particular at the Sitter geometry. Okay? In terms of the pi Lagrangian, it's pretty easy to see because you can show that we know the exact nonlinearities that are here, and actually I'm going to talk about them later. And there is a solution where t mu nu is equal to zero. There is a solution for pi which looks like this. something like h naught square x mu, okay? Now, if you look at how matter is coupled to pi, okay, you see that matter is effectively, at least for small gravitational fields, matter is effectively coupled to the metric h mu mu plus pi eta mu, okay? Okay, so matter is in this metric. If you plug this into this metric, you can check that this is exactly the short distance. So the x is much smaller than h0 to the minus 1 limit of the Sitter space. Okay? So the geometry perceived by matter is that of the Sitter space, and you can check this statement already at the level of this local Lagrangian, which is valid that distance is much shorter than Hubble. Okay? I'm going to be more precise about this later, but that's basically the idea. Okay? Now, unfortunately, this solution here is unstable. Okay? There is a ghost. There's a negative energy particle. In particular, pi itself around this solution has a negative kinetic energy. And so the solution is untenable. Okay? Cannot be trusted. There are also other pathologies, which if I have time, I'm going to talk about later. but if you want, this example is showing that, first of all, even in a fairly complicated model like DGP, which is a five-dimensional model with an infinite five-dimensional bulk, you can grasp all the interesting and bad features of the modifications of gravity you're talking about locally at the level of just linearized general relativity plus a scalar with non-trivial self-interactions, okay? And the scalar is universally coupled to the matter, to matter, okay? Whereas when you go beyond this regime, so at distances of order Hubble or larger, okay, the local description that we have here totally breaks down, makes no sense, and you start seeing the full five-dimensional nature of the model.
So just a question, in T mu mu, there's no pi part of that. That's
okay, very good. I'll come to that. For now, there's no pi in that. Okay? I'm going to come to that. Yes. Okay, so let me try to generalize this. So I want to study, in general, so you see here, the very nice feature was that, well, first of all, in order to agree with experiments, you need some sort of nonlinearities to shield the new degree of freedom at short distances. The very nice feature of the model was the self-accelerating solution, but unfortunately, it's plagued by ghosts. Okay? So the general question we want to ask is whether this is a totally general fact.
So that pi solution you wrote down was the solution of L pi?
Yes.
And so by L pi, what exactly did you mean?
Okay, so I'm going to come to that. I'm sorry, I'm being generic right now because
wanted to know what I should or shouldn't understand.
Okay, yes. Anyway, the L pi for DGP is something like this. There is some coefficient here, d pi squared, box pi. Okay? So this is a standard kinetic term. Here I have some non-trivial non-linearity. Okay? And you can check that the solution of the equation of motion coming from here is exactly something like this. But this scale is related to this coefficient. Okay? Okay, so I want to study, in general, the connection between self-acceleration, the existence of self-accelerating solutions, if you want, and ghosts. Okay? Of course, when I say in general, I have to make some assumptions. So the assumption I'm going to make is that the modifications of gravity I study are due, at least locally, okay, so a distance is much shorter than the Hubble scale, to a scalar field, to a scalar degree of freedom, universally coupled to the stress energy tensor, or, which is the same, kinetically mixed with the metric. Okay? So I'm going to try to, this is exactly what happens in massive gravity and in DGP. I'm going to try to, if you want, to construct the the most general class of theories that have this property. Okay, I want to find a modification of gravity that locally, at short distances, shorter than cosmological, is nothing but the exchange of a new scalar. And of course, in order to be consistent with experiments, etc., it should have some nice feature like nonlinearities, etc. We will see what are the needed features. Okay? So schematically, I want something like this. The short distance is what? Gr plus a scalar coupled to the stress energy tensor plus some non-trivial dynamics for pi, unspecified. Okay? And I stress that I'm going to do this only locally in a small patch because, as we saw, for instance, in the DGP case, there's no sense in which this is the right description at the global level, so cosmological distances. So I want to be general, and so I want to concentrate on a very small local patch and assume that this is the case. Okay, why? Well, because of the examples above, DGP and massive gravity are in this class, because it's the simplest possibility, because a scalar, we know, is the simplest possibility to mediate a universal force. And in particular, for a vector, if you want to do the same for a vector, it's going to be problematic because you're going to write down, you want to, first of all, you want to, in order for this to be a modification of gravitational interaction, you want some form of universal coupling. So you want to couple to the stress energy tensor, not to some other charge. Otherwise, you're going to start seeing deviation from the equivalence principle. And to couple a vector to the TMU nu, you should couple it like this, for instance. But this is obviously zero for a conserved TMU nu, so it's going to be problematic. You could couple it like this, perhaps, but then at three levels, you're not going to get any force, etc. Okay, so this is a very simple possibility that turns out to be the correct one in many models. Okay? Okay, so what are the features you would like to have for such a theory? Okay, so this is the question. Is self-acceleration tied to the presence of ghosts? I mean, intuitively, it looks like it, because you could say, look, if you want to usually scale, for instance, you want to mediate a new force with a scalar, usually a scalar gives you an attractive force. For self-acceleration, you need a repulsive force, and so it looks like you need a scalar with a wrong sign propagator, which is like saying it's a ghost, it has a wrong sign kinetic energy. But of course, because of the non-linearities you want to have in the model, this statement is kind of subtle. So let's see more in detail what we need. Okay, so what we want is that we want order one deviations from GR on cosmological scales. Okay? That's why we are interested in modifications of gravity in the first place. Two, we want negligible deviations in the solar system. Okay? Because GR works perfectly in the solar system. And three, given our question there, we want to find, if they exist, self-accelerating solutions without ghosts. Without ghosts. Okay? In this class of theories. Now, first of all, let's look at the kinematics. So how do we set up the problem kinematically? So we said we want to focus on distances much shorter than Hubble. Okay? So in particular, we want to rewrite a standard FRW solution, Riemann-Lewis Walker solution, locally. Okay, let's say we expand locally around ourselves now. We want to rewrite the cosmological solution in terms of some as a very small gravitational field. Okay? So the standard field of the solution is this. And we know that although this is a highly nonlinear solution of Einstein's equations in general, Of course, as long as we focus on a smooth neighborhood at some point, we can always pretend to be in flat space plus small deviations. Okay, that's the essence of the equivalence principle, if you want. Okay, so let me expand. Actually, let me call this variable y, because x is going to be something else. So let me expand around y equals 0. Let's say we want to describe cosmology here, now, around us, as a small gravitational field. Of course, this approximation is going to break down cosmological distances, but locally we can do it. Okay? So there's a set of coordinates I can choose, which makes this manifest, and these are called Fermi normal coordinates, if you want. Okay? And the metric in Fermi normal coordinates becomes a quadratic order in the displacement from the origin, becomes something like 1 minus, let me write it exactly, h dot plus h square, x square, times dt square, plus 1 minus 1 half h square, x square, dx square. Plus, of course, order x cubed. Okay? So the idea here is that we want to rewrite the cosmological solution as a small gravitational field because we want to make use of this assumption that on short distances we have a new scalar degree of freedom, and we want to compare the cosmological solution we have in this modified theory with the cosmological solution we'll have in general relativity. Okay? Okay. Now, of course, I mean, this is flat. This looks like flat at x equals 0, but of course, as usual, the invariant quantity is the curvature tensor. The curvature tensor is related to second derivatives of the metric, and so this is not flat. It has some non-trivial curvature. Okay? So the effect of the expansion here shows up just as some tidal force around the origin, which is what it is in general relativity. Okay? Now, this is just these are not the only coordinates in which the metric can be put in this form, that is to say, flat plus order x squared correction. Okay? In particular, here we chose Newtonian gauge. Newtonian gauge is just calling this, if you want, so with the minus is plus 2 phi minus 2 psi. Okay, so if you write a metric like this, this is called Newtonian gauge, and it's a choice of coordinates. Now, it's well known that Newtonian gauge is a complete gauge fixing at k different from 0, so at all momenta different from 0. Just to avoid any confusion, I'm not talking about cosmological perturbations here. I'm dealing a flat Robertson Walker background as a small perturbation on top of Minkowski space, okay? And I'm expressing this in Newtonian gauge in Minkowski space, okay? This is a good approximation only locally, of course. At cosmological distances, it breaks down, but I don't care. Okay, so it's a complete gauge fixing at k different from 0.
This is the gravitational field of a uniformly filled self-gravitating universe out to distances that are... It's basically general relativistic version of the uniformly filled sphere.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, nothing more than that. Exactly. But I want to do this because I need to compare, if you want, two solutions and extract the pi configuration corresponding to the modified gravity solution. Okay. So, it's a complete gauge fixing at non-zero momentum, but our configuration here has exactly zero momentum, because x squared is nothing but two derivatives with respect to k of delta 3 of k, which is supported only at k equals 0. Okay? Which means that this does not fix the gauge. We have some gauge freedom. Okay? We have some gauge freedom, and it's useful to use this gauge freedom to rewrite the metric in another form. which is the following. So there is an infinitesimal gaze transformation can perform that makes the metric conformally flat. Okay? So not only the metric is a small perturbation of Minkowski space, it's also a conformally flat perturbation of Minkowski space. And it's going to be important for us. Okay? So 1 minus x squared. These are new x and new t coordinates, okay, but I'm not using different symbols. 1 half x dot plus x squared t squared times the flat metric, minus dt squared plus dx squared. Okay? Now, the downside of this is that while these Fermi normal coordinates were nice because this description holds for all times, so it's local in x, but it follows the observer for all times, okay? So the gravitational field is small all along the trajectory of the observer. Here, this is an expansion both a small x and a small t, okay? So it's valid only locally in space and time, but that's fine. So here we are explicitly expanding, if you want, around here now. Okay, that's good enough for us. Now, okay, so this was some kind of kinematics preliminary. Now let me introduce the dynamics, some dynamics. So, let's introduce pi. Okay, introducing pi means that we are replacing the gravitational GR action, say, which is this for small gravitational fields. Okay, we're replacing it by the same, so LGR, plus a small mixing between the scalar and R, plus some unspecified dynamics for the scalar so far. Okay? Now, this mixing is just a way of automatically getting universal coupling to matter, if you want. It's better to go to a new set of variables and define h mu nu as h hat mu nu plus pi eta mu nu. Okay? In which case, 2 pi eta mu nu actually. In which case, what I get is hat, R hat. I'm using a fully covariant notation here, but it's implicit that I'm dealing with small gravitational fields. So this should be interpreted at quadratic order in the gravitational field. Okay? Plus, I have the coupling between the new metric tensor and the stress energy tensor. Plus, I have L pi, still unspecified. Plus, I have universal coupling between pi and the stress energy. Okay?
Is that a different L pi now?
Yes, yeah, because there's going to be some transformation thing, etc.
Derivatives of pi.
Exactly. Okay. So, but I'm going exactly. But okay, we'll see that that shouldn't matter. So I'm coming to that in a few seconds.
I think I fell asleep for a second. Pi r, that's like Brunswick-like term, right? That's
yes, exactly. Exactly. What I'm saying is that I mean it's totally equivalent to postulate this or this. Okay, it's just a matter of conformal frames, and this is a way of automatically getting that. But it's just equivalent.
Right.
Okay?
And eventually, you just write for us lambda L pi as you like it in your gauge fix.
Exactly. Exactly. And once again, it's important that we have a universal coupling like this because we want to mediate a universal force. Otherwise, we wouldn't call it a gravitational force. Okay? If we start seeing deviations from the equivalence principle, it's another force. It's a different force. Okay. Now, technically, let me remind you what I'm doing. So I'm keeping the lowest order, so I'm expanding in the fields here, okay? And I'm keeping the lowest order in H mu nu and or h bar mu mu, whatever, in the gravitational field, say, and in pi's contribution to the geometry. Okay? So here, I'm saying that matter sees this metric here, okay, and I'm treating pi linearly here, because I want to use the fact that when you go at shorter and shorter distances, the deviations from Minkowski space becomes smaller and smaller, okay? So I can always do that. I can always treat the geometry as a small perturbation of Minkowski space. On the other hand, for reasons that will become clear in a second, and also I already sketched earlier, I want to allow for generic nonlinearities in pi's self-interactions, okay? So the statement here is that the geometry is small, quote-unquote, so it's a small deviation from Minkowski space, and so gravitational self-interactions are small. On the other hand, pi's self-interactions are not necessarily small. Okay? Now we come to the issue of pi's contribution to the stress energy tensor. Okay? And to what's in L pi, is that the metric or not, etc. So let me define, if you want, an interesting modification of gravity as a theory in which the gravitational back reaction associated to the profile pi takes is negligible with respect to pi's contribution, to pi's direct contribution to the geometry. That is to say, I want pi to enter directly in a geometry like this to mediate a new force, and I don't want to get interesting effects to rely on the fact that pi itself is going to have some stress energy tensor, because otherwise I wouldn't call that a modification of gravity. I would call that just a scalar field with some stress energy tensor that is, say, driving the expansion of the universe. Okay? This is an assumption. I'm going to come back to this assumption, but if you want, it's almost a definition of what a modification of gravity is. You want to mediate a new force. You don't want to participate in the usual gravitational dynamics just by adding stress energy tensor. Okay? So I'm going to assume that the stress energy tensor associated to pi is negligible. Okay? And that is going to be true locally at very small distances. We'll see that later. But for the moment, let me assume this. So I'm going to assume that whatever profile pi gets, it doesn't have a large gravitational back reaction.
You probably, whatever you write out for L pi, you can check this and find its consistent assumption.
Yes,
That's exactly.
Yeah, there's also the matter of how I couple pi to gravity, minimal coupling, etc. But exactly.
I mean, these arguments are very similar to how one constructively writes down Brown's decay theory.
Yes, I see.
Right? But then, as we know, whether T mu null of Brown's decay field sort of symmetric or not depends on the gauge, in a way.
Yes, so on the conforma, yeah.
But it's all checkable.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, so, you see, this is a crucial assumption, and it's going to make our life very easy, because if I can neglect pi's gravitational back reaction, it means that for given sources, the solution for given T mu and given boundary conditions, say, the solution for H hat I get is exactly the same I would have in GR, okay? So with that assumption in mind, H hat mu nu for given, say, stress energy tensor is exactly the gravitational field I will get in GR at the same value of the stress energy tensor, modulo boundary conditions. Okay? Which means, if you recall how pi entered in the physical metric, if you want, seen by, let me write it down here somewhere. This is the metric seen by matter. Okay? Which means that now, if someone like, I don't know, DGP, give me their metric in their modified gravity theory for given stress energy tensor, I can compute for the same stress energy tensor the corresponding GR solution, and this is this, and I can get the pi configuration simply by taking the difference. Okay? So this assumption allows me to extract the pi configuration once I know the metric for a given stress energy tensor. Okay? Now there's a matter of gauge. H bar, once again, is exactly the same solution you have in exactly the solution you have in GR with the same stress energy tensor. Now, there's a matter of gauge. Why? Because in general, I mean, a conformal transformation like this does not preserve my gauge fixing. So, first of all, in order to get this, in order for this difference to be proportional to eta mu mu, I should express both in conformal gauge. And that's why it was useful to rewrite the cosmological field as a small conformal deformation of inclosed space. Okay? But this is not enough, because conformal gauge is not a complete gauge fixing either. It's still invariant under conformal transformations. Conformal transformations are exactly diffeomorphisms that leave the metric conformally flat. Okay? Which means that the pi I extract from, I'm able to extract from the geometry, is not unique. Okay? Pi and pi plus some. Sorry, let me step back for a second. We said we still have the freedom to make conformal transformations. How do conformal transformations act on pi? You can check that the dilations add a constant to pi, because pi is simply the conformal factor, and the spatial conformal transformations add some linear term like this. Okay? So this is the action of conformal transformations on pi, infinitesimal ones, of course. So it means that pi's contribution to the geometry is invariant under this thing here. Okay? Or, put the other way around, once I have the geometry, I can extract pi, the pi configuration associated with it, but only up to this shift here, a constant plus a linear term. Okay. Yes?
Most metrics aren't conformally flat in any gauge.
Exactly.
So this is just an argument for what this theory looks like for a particular set of solutions?
Exactly. So if you want, the claim is that if I have a theory such that this difference cannot be put in conformal, cannot be made conformally flat by a coordinate change, it means that it does not correspond to a modification of gravity where the scalar is responsible for mediating unit force. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? I'm saying that in those theories, perhaps H mu nu, or in a generic solution, H mu nu and H bar mu nu are not going to be conformally flat. But when I take the difference, if that's not conformally flat, it means that there is no scalar that I can use to make up for the difference. It's going to be some more complicated modification of gravity. Okay? Because what I'm just saying is that if I introduce a scalar, its contribution to the geometry is going to be some conformally flat addition. Okay? So if the difference between the two metrics is not conformally flat, my starting point is not correct.
But so eventually you write down some set of field equations.
Yes.
Right? Is the claim that those field equations, that the only solution of those field equations is a metric that is whose difference from the corresponding solution of the Einstein equations is conformally flat?
Well, I'm saying so.
I think maybe the logic here, I think he's gonna write down Lagrangians, which would make sense in any metric.
Yes.
You know, for example,
yes.
If you had other forms of matter, you could have any metric. This is just, I think, a way of arguing for a particular set of Lagrangians, going to be the formulation of his theory.
Okay, that's what my question was.
Exactly.
Right?
So eventually, when I'm
just looking at some particular,
eventually I'm going to specify these, and
then
everything will make sense.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to deductively construct what you should expect for a structure of a pi. Okay.
I'm much happier.
Thank you. Thanks for the question. So, okay. Alternatively, one could say, okay, forget about these all these geometries. In order to compare two geometries, just compare, say, the Riemann tensors, which are the invariant characterization of the geometry. Or let's say Ricci, because we are dealing with the scalars. But still, the Ricci tensor of that metric is just the original Ricci plus some two derivative thing in part. Okay? Etc. There's also some box pi here. So if I try to extract pi by comparing the two Ricci tensors, I have the same problem. I get only the second derivatives. And a constant term and a linear term are totally undetermined. Okay, so far, I mean, this is just an ambiguity in what pi is going to be, but it's not a problem. Now, going back to our original conformal, our original expression for the Freeman-Walker metric in terms of a small deformation of the Minkowski space, if we apply this recipe there, we get that pi is nothing but the difference of the Newtonian potential we get in our modified gravity theory and the Newtonian potential we get in GR expressed in a conformal gauge, as we said, okay? Plus that ambiguity there, okay? And this is, if you want to write it down, it's 1/4 minus 1/4 a square minus a square in GR at the same value of rho and p, x square, plus 1/4 2 h dot minus a dot gr plus h square minus h square gr square. Plus constant and linear term. Okay? Linear term I write it as just as t because of isotropy I want an isotropic configuration. So where these GR quantities are computed at the same value of rho and p as h square and h dot, okay? Because it's the sources you should keep constant in comparing the two metrics. Okay, so since I'm running late, very late actually, I will skip the example. I have an example here just to show you that I'm not crazy, and it's just a DGP, the standard DGP cosmology rewritten in these terms, okay? If you do this exercise in DGP, you have the right, you know the correct modified Freeman equations for DGP, okay? So you construct this formal thing, which we call pi, and I claim that this is exactly the pi singled out by Marcus and collaborators, because if you take this configuration and plug it in the equations of motion for their pi, you get an identity, okay? So the statement here is that this formulation in DGP is exact without any decoupling limit, because the point is that the limit we are taking here, which is zooming in at very short distances, is exactly achieving what normally we call decoupling limit. We don't need to take any large ratio of n Planck's, etc. This formulation in DGP is exact because it's a local statement around the origin. Okay? So this makes, just to say that this makes sense. Okay, so let me construct the pi Lagrangian, mm-hmm. And I'm not going to go very far apparently. Okay, so what should be L pi? So one first assumption, first condition we have is that we need nonlinearities to be there, because as we said, we want order one deviations from GR at cosmological scales, but very small deviations at shorter distances. And with a linear Lagrangian, we cannot do it, because a linear Lagrangian is just the exchange of a scalar period into 1/r potential. Okay? Now, I have two different motivations for the symmetry I'm going to talk about. So let me give you the shorter one, because apparently I have no time. Okay? Shorter one is the following. So we said that pi's contribution to the geometry is invariant under this transformation. Okay? Now, why do we need nonlinearities? We need nonlinearities to screen the scalar at short distances. We need nonlinearities where we have large masses, compact masses like the sun or something. And we want to be sure, in a robust way, that there, pi's contribution to the geometry is small, okay? Because we know that there, general relativity works perfectly fine, okay? So, if delta mu nu due to phi, we know, as we said, is just related to the second derivatives of phi, okay? Which is invariant under this quantity, okay? So, if the equation of motion for pi is purely an equation of motion for this quantity, okay, we have a better chance of implementing this decoupling of the scalar at short distances, because we don't care about the value of pi or its first derivative, etc. We don't care, perhaps, I mean, for very symmetric configurations, we can keep this under control. But in general, there's going to be some crazy profile for pi. But if the equation of motion for pi is an algebraic equation like this, this is directly controlling in an algebraic way the size of pi's correction to the geometry, okay, as a function of the local distribution of matter. Okay?
So by that statement, you mean there's a specific delta r mu nu. It might be more complicated. It might have functions of pi's.
Well,
you
exactly
literally
this.
Mean it's a linear combination of...
It's exactly this at the lowest order of pi. Once again, mm-hmm. I'm treating
with exactly those coefficients, or I mean, or just with some with the coefficients that actually do correspond to delta r mu nu.
Exactly.
Okay.
Two.
Okay. Whatever. I don't care.
Okay.
Yeah.
But some, you, all right. Minus. Okay. But as usual, I mean, given an expression like this, okay, I can extract the trace part and the non-trace part. So in the end, there is a one-to-one correspondence between delta mu nu and dv dv pi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because I can trace this,
mm-hmm.
I start with this part, etc. Okay? So the statement is that if I want the Weinstein effect to be robust, okay, I want an equation of motion like this. Okay? So I want, remember that pi had a direct coupling with t mu mu, t alpha alpha, okay? So there was a pi t alpha alpha in front in the Lagrangian somewhere, okay? So I want the left-hand side to be just d alpha over d pi, okay? And I want f to be a nonlinear algebraic scalar constructed out of this tensor, okay? Nonlinear because I need nonlinearities, okay? And I want it to be just a function of delta mu nu because I want the impact on the geometry to be purely determined by the distribution, the local distribution of matter, and nothing else.
I guess if you did this same thing for Brunswick, you'd probably just get delta mu equals the alpha, or rather some trace equals the alpha alpha or something, right?
Sorry, it should be the same. What do you mean? You mean this relation? This relation should
no,
be the
no,
same
that's
as
what I'm saying. But the equation for Brunswick,
yes,
box phi equals t is precisely of this form.
Exactly. But that's the linear one.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good, yes. So this is a very complicated version of Brunswick, if you want.
So that's why it has no strong coupling, no working effect, no nothing.
Exactly.
Here you're just putting in strong coupling in the story using this logic.
Exactly. I have an independent reason why the equation of motion should be like that, but if you want, if you're interested, I can tell you about it later. So, okay, so that's the assumption. Now, that's the assumption, okay? So we want to, so in particular, since delta r mu nu is invariant under this transformation here, okay, the equation of motion for my pi are invariant under this transformation here. So I call, and indeed they only depend on the second derivatives of pi, which are invariant. Okay? So I call V, well, this is just a translation, which makes pi derivatively coupled. This is a shift in the gradient of pi. Okay? So d mu pi shifts by c mu. Okay? And I call this Galilean invariance because it's exactly the four-dimensional analog of x dot of t going to x dot of t plus some reference velocity. Okay? So that's Galilean invariance in mechanics. I'm promoting these to four dimensions, four coordinates. Okay? So I call this Galilean invariance and pi the Galilean. So, okay, so the logic here is that in order to have a robust implementation of Einstein effect, we have an equation of motion like this. We want an equation of motion like this. So we have to characterize what are the Lagrangian terms that gives us an equation of motion like this. Okay? So, first of all, by counting derivatives at each order in pi, suppose I have an nth order operator, an operator with n pi, so I have pi to the n, and I should have 2n minus 2 derivatives, okay? So that when I take a variation with respect to pi, I drop a pi, I have n minus 1 pi's, n minus 2, 2n minus 2 derivatives, I have a chance of having exactly this structure, the structure that only depends on second derivatives of pi. Okay? Operators are fairly simple to construct. I'm not going to write them down explicitly, all of them, but just to give you an example. So the first trivial operator is pi. Okay? Its variation is 1. Okay? And it's, of course, invariant under everything. Okay? And indeed, it has this structure with n equals 0. Sorry, with n equal 1, pi to the 1, and 0 derivatives. A less non-trivial example, but which is also kind of trivial, is, as we said, the kinetic energy, okay? The kinetic energy is exactly the analog of the Galilean kinetic energy, and its variation is box pi, which is invariant. Sorry, this is L2, okay? Its variation is invariant, box pi. And we can ask, is the Lagrangian invariant? The Lagrangian is not invariant under that shift. The action is, though, in the sense that the Lagrangian is invariant up to the total derivative. Under that shift, the Lagrangian shifts by 2 d mu pi c mu, which is a total derivative. Okay? You can carry out this at all orders in pi. Or you can show, it's fairly easy, you can show that at each order in pi, there is one and only one such terms. Okay? So there is one term at every order in pi. But it turns out that all these terms are associated with Kalin invariance of the of that matrix. Okay, Kalin invariants are like the determinant, the sum of subdeterminants of rank n minus 1, etc. Okay? And so in particular, in D-dimensions, this matrix has rank D, okay? Which means that there are only D Kalin invariants, non-zero Kalin invariants. Okay? So the statement is that in D we have D Galilean invariant operators plus the trivial one, the tuple. Okay, the trivial one is not associated with this matrix. Okay? So in 4D we have from the tuple to some quintic term which has a form like d pi d2 pi cube.
Sorry, why does the, I mean, I understand that this thing has rank D, so, sorry, how does that tell me about the Galilean invariant operators?
Okay, so there is some amount of algebra here, okay? There's some amount of
algebra. I just want to understand the claim.
The claim is the following. So the Galilean invariant operators in the equations of motion show up as suitable contractions of this matrix, mm-hmm. Okay? It turns out that the equations of motion you can write down that come from a Lagrangian, mm-hmm. constructed out of Galilean invariant operators, has the following property, that every operator that you write down in this Lagrangian is associated with one Kalin invariant of this matrix. Okay? And since a matrix of rank D has only D such invariants, mm-hmm. you stop at some point. Okay. So formally, what I'm saying is that formally there is one invariant for every order in pi. So there's also an invariant that formally can write down pi to the 20 times some derivatives. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that starts being non-zero only in d equals 20. Okay, whereas in all lower dimensions, it's trivially a total derivative.
I see.
Okay?
Okay.
So the product of of two of these invariants
is
not
invariant.
Is not invariant.
No, it's not
because they're like that kinetic term because of
yeah.
the...
Okay.
Yeah, because of the integration by parts.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
That's nice.
So, exactly. Yeah, that's pretty nice. So, in 4D, we only have five operators we can write down. We only have five operators we can write down. From the tadpole to some quintic interaction like this with suitable contraction of indices. Okay? By the way, as a check, in 1D, we have the tadpole, what I call, which is a linear potential for X, which probably is the only potential which is Lorentz invariant, Galilean invariant, and the kinetic energy, which is obviously the only Galilean invariant kinetic energy you can write down. Okay, so the fact that, so let me conclude. Can I have 5 minutes?
Yes.
So, the fact that we have only five operators that we can write down makes a thorough analysis of highly symmetric configurations very possible, okay? Because it's just a matter of solving algebraic equations. I say it's just a matter of solving algebraic equations because remember that the equation of motion is some algebraic equation for this tensor, and now if I pick a very symmetric configuration for pi, this reduces to an algebraic equation for one, two variables, something like this. Okay? So, in particular...
Are you going to write these down for 4D?
You want them?
Are they in the paper?
Yes.
Okay.
So these are the equations of motion, and these are the Lagrangian terms with the notation, with this notation explained
okay.
here. Okay? Okay, and in particular, okay, let me just give you the results because I don't have. Okay, the results are the following. So, first of all, the Lagrangian 4 pi is going to be the sum of these Lagrangian terms, okay, with generic coefficients of I going from 1 to 5, we said. Okay? So the question now is, can we build a sensible theory by playing with these coefficients? Okay. Turns out that you can do the following. Okay. You can impose that there exists a self-accelerating solution. Okay. That this is stable with no ghosts, and this you can do. You can impose that on top, I mean, with this, on top of these self-accelerated solutions, you also want to have realistic solutions that describe, say, the gravitational field of the sun. So you want to find spherically symmetric solutions with these asymptotics, okay? This should reproduce something like compact objects in our universe, okay? So spherical solutions with the sitter asymptotics.
Check the stability of the self-accelerated solutions. Not be expanding about the
yes.
accelerating backwards. So you're going to do another expansion again, and you get what kind of Lagrangian you get then?
Very nice. Okay, so the exactly. This is a good question. Thanks for the question. So the self-accelerating solution is going to be a very symmetric one, as we said. We can extract it by that formula I gave you. Given h mu nu and h mu nu hat, pi is just the difference of the two. Okay. And so h mu nu hat is just Minkowski space because you are in GR you would have zero expansion with zero cosmological constant. H mu nu is just the center. Pi is going to be something like h squared x mu x mu. Now you can check that, well, this obviously does not break Minkowski Lorentz invariance, okay, because it's a Lorentz invariant thing. Apparently it breaks Galilean invariance. But at this level in derivatives, you can check that effectively for the perturbations about it, it doesn't break the symmetries of the Lagrangian. Okay, in the sense that the Lagrangian for the perturbations, I can explain it to you in detail if you want. But the Lagrangian for perturbations is still going to be Galilean invariant, And so it's still going to be a sum of the Galilean invariant operators we wrote down, which means that the Lagrangian for, say, delta pi about the self-accelerating solution is still going to be something like this, with different coefficients now, di, li. Okay? Apart, of course, from the tadpole. You start from 2. The tadpole is not there because the De Sitter solution is a solution. So the Lagrangian for perturbations shouldn't start with a linear term. It should start a quadratic order. Okay? But it's still going to be a Galilean invariant combination. Okay? And by the way, there's a one-to-one correspondence between these coefficients, starting from I equal 2. It's invertible, which means that we can as well parameterize the problem directly in terms of this. That is to say, we can assume that we have totally generic DI coefficients here, okay? Forget about the original ones, and do the analysis directly for the perturbations. Okay? So, there are spherical solutions. With this.
Another question, though. So, the self-examining solutions, I mean, are you assuming that there's no tadpole in the C Lagrangian product? Because that looks like it might be a bit of a sort of, like a, I don't know, like it's a potential term, like it's giving you some sort of cosmological constant. You think it's variation, it gives you a constant, right?
Exactly. So, first of all, all these claims also apply to the C1 equals 0 case. So, without a tadpole. Okay? So we just had to include it because it's allowed by all symmetries, so there's no way why we should there's no reason why we should neglect it. But all the claims also apply with if you neglect it. Okay? And so there are spherical solutions with the De Sitter asymptotics that are also stable against small perturbations. Okay? So far so good. The problem is that, and if you want to write down the conditions on the coefficients, but they are just order one conditions, so there's no real tuning in these conditions. The problem is that there is no way of choosing the coefficients in such a way as to avoid superluminal excitations. That is to say, about these spherical solutions with the De Sitter asymptotics, radial perturbations are superluminal. This happens very far away from the source, okay? Out of this nonlinear sphere, if you want, that surrounds the sources. But still, it's impossible to choose coefficients in such a way as to avoid it, okay?
While keeping yourself oxalic in solution or just generically?
Good question. I have to check.
Okay.
I have to check. Good question. Yeah. I don't mind. Okay, I think I conclude here. Let me just say that all this is a local analysis, and it applies to all theories that, for some reason, reduces to a scalar kinetically mixed Lie metric at short distances. We tried to embed these theories in a global theory, that is to say, can we promote this pi to a global four-dimensional scalar degree of freedom and make a sensible theory valid at all distances. And the problem we encountered is that we can, as long as we neglect the pi's stress energy tensor. Okay. So if you want, pi's stress energy tensor in this theory, you can check, is very small close to the origin, okay? But it becomes a sizable contribution to the geometry at the large distances. The way we tried to embed this theory in a global theory couldn't cure that. That is to say, there was no way of canceling pi's contribution to the stress energy tensor at large distances, which means, and this was intrinsically breaking the symmetries of the problem. And since the symmetries of the problem were crucial to make the system sensible, we failed, if you want. So from this point of view, DGP is more magical because the fact that it's a five-dimensional theory, for some reason, takes care of this problem we encounter. Okay? So if you want, what we try to do is, can we write down a purely four-dimensional version of DGP? We can locally. We can make it better than DGP locally. Globally, we failed. I don't know if there are possible other directions. Thanks for your
would you just clarify what you mean exactly by locally versus globally?
Okay, sorry. Locally, I mean that all this is very, a distance is much shorter than
okay,
the
so you, quote unquote, would like to have a full nonlinear completion of the background and the theory.
Yes.
So that you can vary the action, put in the sources, get some sort of complete nonlinear solution of the complete nonlinear theory, where when you go to this regime you reproduce your
exactly. Okay. If you want, this is a perfectly sensible theory as long as we apart from the superluminal issue, which of course is an issue. It's a perfectly sensible theory as long as we neglect gravitational nonlinearities, because we stay very close to where we live, but we take into account the scalar nonlinearities, which are crucial to screen the scalar from observations at short distances. But we didn't succeed in completing, in introducing nonlinear gravitational dynamics in a sensible way.
Another, something you didn't mention, I mean, in DGP, once you fix the Hubble to be the scale where things, you know, where things go get interesting or weird or whatever, then you also fix the scale. There's some scale that you've now fixed, then you fix in the effective Lagrangian, right? And that scale then in turn fixes the scale of these small deviations inside the Weinstein radius and so on. So what is the story here? I mean, is there something? It's the same. Is it the same scale?
It's yes, it's the same scale.
It's the same scaling. So it's for all these theories the same story.
Because yes, because the idea is the same. Now in DGP, how do you find that scale? Well, you have your source, you have your 1/r potential, and you check when the nonlinearities computed on the 1/r potential becomes of the same order as the linear term in the Lagrange. Okay, mm-hmm. And since here. I think exactly. And the first nonlinearity that becomes important is the same as in DGP, which is the cubic term. Okay, the other nonlinearities are more important close to the source. So this, if you want, this behavior is going to be different than DGP, but the matching here with the nonlinear solution is going to be the same as in DGP.
And how do I see the Hubble scale emerging from this effective theory? What something is breaking down at the Hubble scale? If I just tried kept believing
yes,
this,
yes. Well,
the
of
longer,
course.
Longer
now
distances.
I forgot to put scales in it. Okay, but these coefficients are dimensionful.
Yeah.
Okay, and they control both, as you're saying, the onset of nonlinearities, but they also control the overall size of the Lagrange, which is the overall size of the TMU also.
So the TMU of the pion is getting important at the Hubble.
Yes.
That's where the Hubble comes
exactly.
in.
You can say that TMU of pi is of order of, say, the critical density times Hubble square x square. So close to the origin is negligible.
Mm-hmm.
At Hubble scales, it becomes of the same order as the effect you are keeping track of. Okay? And we found no way of curing this. So perhaps, I mean, the conjecture is that, there's no conjecture. There are two possibilities. Either we weren't clever enough and there is some four-dimensional global completion of these theories that make sense, or for some reason you have to resort to extra-dimensional models like in DGP, and perhaps there is an extra-dimensional variation of DGP that reduces to this at very short distances. Of course, very last comment, from the quantum viewpoint, this is as good or as bad as DGP, okay? Because it has exactly the same symmetries. We just wrote down more operators, but it has exactly the same symmetries. So it has a very low energy, it has a very low strong coupling scale. On the other hand, since there are no ghost excitations, the effective theory can be consistently, although not naturally, extrapolated in the nonlinear regime. And there are superluminal excitations, like in DGP, which signals perhaps that the model cannot be recompleted in a Lorentz invariant theory. And that's
so
it.
You from the pi Lagrangian point of view, you probably have a bigger structure, more parameters, more freedom. So I suppose in some way, what you have written down has differed from DGP, mainly. I think you told us it does, actually, because it admits, for example, a self-accelerating solution with no ghosts.
Exactly.
Whereas the self-accelerating solutions in DGP that are known
yes.
have ghosts.
Yes.
So where is the difference coming from?
Well, the difference is coming
from in those terms in the Lagrangian, which are simply you're saying
in DGP,
they are what they are.
Yeah, whereas in DGP, I mean, DGP they are constrained, right?
I understand that. I was wondering, you know, if you had some sort of big clever principle that tells you, you know. Okay.
No, it's just that you have
three parameters. It's taxonomy. You write down the solutions, and you look, and then you find.
You have three parameters. In DGP, you don't have three parameters.
Related to that, so now people look at co-dimensional too, but so this problem will be. So you think you capture all those solutions?
Well, first of all, there I expect to have more degrees of freedom, right? There's not going to be just
one
scale. And so,
rotational
action. Exactly. So it's going to be more
degrees.
More fields. It has only one, so it's not.
Yeah,
but
in fact,
good, I mean, you know, you may ask that point if you want. If you look at the extensions of this theory,
yes.
Not
yeah, indeed. Is there a four-dimensional description of those models? Do you know?
I guess there is a regime where one would expect one to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that there were massive gravity.
Period.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's a simple argument. I mean, if you write down the boundary effective action, you know, codimension one, you're basically solving a Coulomb problem and evaluating the field on the brain, you know. And for codimension one, where you have a massless potential as a logarithm, that makes sense. But for higher dimensions, you get these power divergences, and if you cut those off, you generically find that the boundary term that you induce is a mass term. So I think Massimo did this.
The model which I explored in detail agrees completely with what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the setup where we discussed, you know, this in detail with resolved codimension is exactly behaving like 5D massive gravity. I mean, 4D massive gravity.
But even if with the non-linear topologies also.
For this thing, it's literally the boundary Lagrangian is literally massive gravity. So Massimo has some argument that's Massimo-like, but I think if you just write down the boundary term, it gives you a.
The reason, you know, I'm a little bit cautious in making this statement as a general statement, just because of these funny hybrid codimension 2, codimension 1 things, which we were also discussing,
yes.
Which are like, you know, half cones with
yes.
codimension 1 brain in there and something else quadrant in it. So it may be massive gravity plus something else that you would expect there.
Let me suggest that we thank our speaker and some of us who are interested can stick around and we can continue the conversation.
Yeah.
Okay, let's thank Alberto again.